Hi, and welcome to the next episode of Cajun Cross Global Entertainment's Audio Theater. We've been casting for a while now, but after next week, our cast hiring will come to a close, so get your auditions in soon. This is only one of the audio drama series we're producing here at CCGE's Audio Theater. The particular series you're listening to now is called Twisted Shorts. This episode is titled Memory Patterns. Twisted Shorts is an anthology series with all new episodes, new characters, new locations, and new multi-genre stories every week. But the new regular drama series began production soon. The Bar in Sector G is a science fiction drama set on the world of Gliese in a bar called the White Queen. Tales of smugglers, assassins, gunrunners, synthetic humans, and aliens from across the galaxy abound. As the bar owner Jake Cutter says,
"Everybody here has a story. Murderers, thieves, soldiers, widows, people running away from their old lives or running to a new one. It's all here in Sector G, and I see it every day."
Genesis Wars is a science fiction series where mankind is on the edge of extinction and one man holds the key. It's too bad he wants to kill us all. In the course of human history, we fought many wars. Some were for possession, some for freedom, some for our faith, and some for revenge. And every time, even with such devastation, we knew the human race would prevail, that life would carry on no matter the outcome. Not this time. Now we're fighting a battle for our very existence. And we're losing. The Island is an action-adventure series revolving around the sinking of the USS Cyclops during World War I. Welcome to an island that doesn't exist, filled with creatures and beings that can only be imagined. Welcome to the worlds of archaeology, cryptozoology, and myth run amok. Indiana Jones would approve. If you like what you hear this evening, please sign up to become a patron of Audio Theater. Becoming a patron entitles you to special perks that we give to you for being a part of our worlds. The address is on your screen above, and we thank you. Now enough of me, and on with the show.
Entertainment Audio Theater. Hear the experience.
Cajun Cross Global Entertainment Incorporated Audio Theater presents Memory Patterns by Kip Shelton. Performed by James Martinez, Harry Williams Jr., Alan Abshire, Steve Jones Watson, Wendley Boyd, and Giovanna Casanova.
So imagine red and blue lights, alternating patterns in the front of this small Italian restaurant. Almost a strobe-like effect with the drizzling rain. Five black and white police cars out front, as well as the crime scene investigation team and the coroner. Small crowd milling about in front, trying to see what they can see. Vultures. Over off to the side, I could see Fitzhugh arguing with some little guy. He was obviously upset, trying to get him to calm down. The man was waving his arms frantically, pointing at a vehicle that was inside the crime scene. I lifted the collar off my duster against the rain as I walked towards the scene. I always loved it. The guys gave me a ration of shit. They always laughed at me because I wore an old cowboy duster. Eh, it was an Okie. I still wore boots and a well-worn, battered old Stetson. Old habits die hard. Pulled my badge from my duster pocket, hung it around my neck, lifted the crime scene tape, ducked under, took a few steps, some splashing water, and I started to walk on the sidewalk towards the restaurant. You know, it's funny, I called it a restaurant, but it was Fassini's place. I'd eaten there maybe 30, 40 times, hell, maybe even 50 times over the last 15 years. I'd even taken my wife, well, okay, my ex-wife, here on many occasions. Not that the food was the best in the world, but it was good. The place had been near to my house. Okay, not anymore, but well, not since the divorce. I moved across town, and God only knows where she went. I could have used my badge to find out where she was, but what's the point? She'd say that she was done with me, and my work was more important. She said that I used to use her as a convenience. You know, companionship, sex, when it was needed. Never a real relationship. Hell, even barely a friendship. She was probably right. I mean, come on, I suck. I wasn't the best husband in the world. I took her for granted. I figured she'd always be there. Till one day she wasn't. In my heart, I knew I would love her to the end of day, but likely never see her again. Especially after today.
Taylor? Hey, Will Taylor.
His voice pulled me out of my memories as I turned to find Fitzhugh running towards me.
You still asleep?
You know me. I never sleep.
Yeah, you want some coffee?
No. Hey, anything I should know before I go in?
Yeah, what's him? We got another note.
Yeah. You know, I got that much from Winston there, High Speed. Anything else?
Not really. Isn't this like number 9?
Yeah. No discernible patterns. This has really started to piss me off. You know, I'm busting my ass trying to figure out who this psycho is.
Hey, we'll get him. You always do. How are you otherwise?
Well, it's officially official. I got my papers today.
Really? Have you talked to her? You know where she's living now?
No.
You want me to find out?
Now see, here was my chance. If ever I wanted to know the location of the woman that I'd shared my bed with for the last 15 years, this was it. Fitzhugh could find out information about anything before I left the crime scene. But what good would that do? Would I, in a fit of loneliness, drive past the house in some pathetic attempt to remember, oh, the good old days? No, it was over. No, but thanks.
Yeah, anytime, man. Winston's waiting inside for you.
Something caught his attention over my shoulder, and he was off. I turned back to the door, stepped inside. You know, it's funny, when you're a detective, you pick up on everything. The interior was warm. A little soft glow of those decorative bulbs that gave that dining room its normal, pleasant atmosphere. I could smell the garlic and onions from thousands of meals. The scent was so absorbed, kind of permeated the walls. You know, I kept expecting to hear the Italian trio that used to wander in between the tables singing all those traditional love ballads. But the room was silent. You know, except for the voices coming from the kitchen. I pushed on through the swinging double doors. As I came into the kitchen, I made my way through to the back office. The CSI guys were buzzing around in their outfits, equipment around the stainless steel surfaces, the racks, the pots, and all the pans, and about half a dozen sci-fi gadgets all over the place. Their boss was coming from the back office. We nodded as we passed each other. Standing outside the office door was Winston, dressed in his typical expensive suit, Gianni Colani overcoat. And he's talking to this rat bastard, Randy Cole. What the hell is he doing here? After a moment, I realized that he probably heard the call on the radio and decided to show up here and start brown-nosing. It didn't matter. I wasn't putting up with that tonight.
Taylor, meet number 9. Mario Venisi. Yeah, he was the...
The owner? Yeah, I know. I've met him before.
You do the fig?
So, tell me. What the hell are you doing here in my crime scene?
I was trying to...
He was just in the neighborhood, you know. Thought he'd see if we needed any help, that's all.
Oh, good. How is he at making coffee?
Oh, come on, Taylor. That's not fair. He's just trying to help.
Sure. Then he can help. By getting the hell out of my crime scene.
Listen, asshole. You think that...
Asshole? Listen, you slapdick, punk-ass, boot rookie detective. I've got more time going in reverse than you got going forward. You understand me? This is not your case. Ever since you came up from the minors, you've tried to brown-nose your way into every major investigation. The last one you stuck your fingers into, you managed to taint the evidence. And oh, lo and behold, guess what happened? They had to throw the case out. You get the hell out of my crime scene. Don't you ever show up in my investigation again. You understand me? Because I will have your ass brought up on charges.
You could have heard a pin drop. Even the CSI boys had to kind of stop working, turned over to us, kind of staring in our direction. I was about 5 seconds from punching this little punk square in the mouth.
You can't tell me.
Take your ass south. Last chance.
He looked at Winston, back at me, back at Winston, who shrugged his shoulders.
Look, it's his case, Cole. If he says he wants you gone, then you gotta get gone.
But I thought that...
I had enough. I reached inside my duster, pulled out my Kenwood, keyed that mic. Fitzhugh, you copy?
Yeah, copy that.
Can you send me that blue suit that's out there? Have him come into my crime scene and have somebody escort him.
I'm going. I won't forget this, asshole.
Suck this!
I shot him the finger over my shoulder as I stepped back into the office. The room was decorated in those rich earth tones. Cherry wood desk, scattered with receipts, checks, as well as a full cash register. Slumped over the desk was the body of Mario Vecini. Perfectly round hole through his left temple. His eyes were still wide open. There was a small amount of blood that had kind of pulled together on the blotter beneath him. To the left lay a note with a familiar single word. Remember. I pulled the rubber gloves back. Winston stepped into the office behind me.
You know, you shouldn't be so damn tough on the kid. I mean, he's just trying to make a name for himself.
Screw that guy. He's not messing up my case. I haven't got much to go on. Whoever our killer is knows detective and police procedures, and they've done a great job covering up their tracks. I can't risk any clues that we find being screwed by that glory hound wanting to get his name in the paper.
Yeah, I guess so.
He pointed to the note that lay next to the body.
It looks the same as the others.
It is. The font is the giveaway.
Yeah? What, did you call your wife and find out which one it was?
It's called Kand. And no, I didn't call my ex-wife.
I just thought since she used to be a graphic designer, you would have called her. Ex, huh?
Yeah. Remember? Papers. Divorce.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that.
Thanks. Okay, we're not going to get a ballistics match until forensics gets this bullet out. But I can tell you for a fact, it's him.
You see what the papers are calling
him? Yeah. What is it? The damn memory killer?
Have you figured out what the notes mean?
Let's see. Yeah, my guess is right now I'm pretty sure the killer wants us to remember something.
Oh, you should do stand-up, smartass.
No, I don't know what they mean. But I intend to find out.
I hope so. And soon. Because I don't mind telling you, this one's keeping me up at night. Scares the living shit out of me.
You and me both, brother. You and me both. I took a long drive back to my office while I ran the facts of this case through my head over and over. Each murder had taken place in what seemed to be a completely random site. The only real clues we had were the notes and the slugs. The notes all said the same thing. Remember. All the slugs. Every single one. .380 caliber. This was the only pattern, if you even want to call it a pattern. Serial killers always leave some kind of pattern. It's usually easy to pick up on. Most of them want to get caught because they want to brag about what they had done. But this one... this one scared the hell out of me. This one left only enough of a pattern to confuse the shit out of us. What the hell were we supposed to remember? It had started with a murder at an ice cream shop. The employee was behind the counter, just as he had locked up for the night. Somehow the killer had gotten in without anybody seeing anything. Any forced entry? Boom. Popped the victim right in the head. Then they disappeared without leaving a trace. Only a note. The second had been a coffee shop owner. This one got the wheels turning a bit. I had started to look into some normal, then obvious connections, and even tried looking at the food supply distribution companies that maybe that they shared. Between that and the ice cream shop, I hit a wall. Number three had been a pair of movie theater employees. They had been murdered as they were locking up for the night. A couple of high school kids who had the misfortune of wanting Christmas money for the season. Bam! Both of them. One shot to the temple each. I still tried to run down the whole goods distribution, thinking there was a connection, and there was something in common, but all three, big, fat, fucking zero, nothing. I had realized, somewhere in the line here, that the killer knows something about police and detective procedures because they were doing this without a pattern. Number five had been an amusement park employee. See, he was killed in the middle of his shift at the haunted house ride. He hadn't been found until the end of the day because patrons kept passing over his body all day long, assuming that he was part of the ride. And again, nothing fit the pattern. Nothing I could lock down. No connections. Number six had been a city park employee. Actually, there was two. They were both supposed to be cleaning up trash, but they had snuck off into the trees for a little romantic afternoon. Again, no pattern, no rhyme, no reason. Just things had become very frustrating because none of the investigators, none of the CFI guys, the forensics, had found not one trace of evidence, not even a stray hair. None of these places had security cameras, so we're batting zero here. All I have is a psycho who's out there clearing bases. Number 8, the video store owner. He had been killed on a quiet Saturday morning. A customer had found the body, called it in, of course, so of course what do? We hook up and we arrest the customer, the RP, because when we got there, this meathead starts loading up all the DVDs and says that, oh, the owner wanted him to have them, but he wasn't around to say otherwise. So I looked into that sleptic, but came up zero. All I had was a rap sheet of breaking and entering, fencing, some theft, credit card fraud, nothing violent. Nothing. Nothing could be linked. No pattern, no notes, no nothing. I pulled into the station's parking lot. Just then, the sky decides to burst open. Hard rain comes falling down. Slid back into my parking spot, pulled up the collar of my duster, opened the door, stepped out, boots splashing in the puddles as I sprinted for the front doors. Stepping in quickly inside, I noticed Terry Hay sitting at the night desk. He looked up at me and smiled.
Evening, Taylor. Looks like it's raining.
Hey, you're good. Why haven't you made detective yet?
Won't happen. I'd put you guys out of a job.
Anyone on the floor tonight?
Everybody's out. Ramirez and King were up there, but they had to go to the bird tracks.
Ooh, it's a bad night for going there. The bird tracks were a series of streets that have been named after all the different various birds from the city. It was also the most heavily gang-populated area in the murder capital of the city. Most cops avoid going there if they have to. Man, I felt bad for Ramirez and King tonight. It was cold, dark, and wet, and they were headed right into an area where nobody wanted them.
I heard you had another one. The memory killer.
Yeah, it looks like it. I'm going to go up to my office and write my reports and see what I can do about this evidence.
You know what I think? I think that the answer to this guy is staring us in the face, and we're just too focused on trying to find him to see it. Maybe if we step back, look wider, we might get something.
You might be right, Terry. I stepped off the elevator, walked over to my desk. The case files were already open and spread across my desk. I sat down hard in my chair, and it makes that squeaky sound as I leaned back. I picked up my case file from the first murder and started in, trying to force some kind of fresh perspective. Come on, come on, T, what are you missing here? What the hell am I missing? My voice was loud in this empty office. In 6 months, I hadn't found a damn thing. Starting to think this guy would never be caught. I stood up, hung my jacket over the back of my chair, set my ass back down in the chair, and of course, it made its proverbial squeak. I opened the center drawer, took out my pen. There, on top of a stack of old arrest reports, lay my divorce papers. Ah, Cindy. Cindy, Cindy, Cindy. What the hell did I do? Who am I kidding? I knew exactly what I had done. I had managed to screw up my marriage. I can't even say it was a good marriage because I never worked hard at it. Never worked hard to make a good marriage. Hell, I didn't even work hard to make it a so-so marriage. Looked at the corner of my desk and there her picture was. Still there, staring back at me from that little dark wood frame. Her blonde hair tied back. Cute little ponytail. She was sitting under this live oak tree at her parents' backyard. That picture had been taken 6 months after we were married. This was definitely my favorite. We'd been happy for the first couple of years, or at least so I thought we were. In the beginning, it'd been perfect, as some beginnings can be. Where was it we met? A party? No. Wait. Where did we meet? It was before that. My sister Amy's birthday. I had gone in to pick up some cake at the ice cream shop. She had been standing there in line, and I thought, man, this one was a babe. I asked her if she'd like to go to a party with me. She asked me if I was a good guy, and I said, my mother thought so. She left. It actually worked. She went with me to my sister's party, just like that. All over some ice cream. Ice cream. Ice cream. I had bought the cake and the ice cream from the first crime scene. Holy shit, why didn't I remember that? Come on, that's a coincidence, right? I mean, come on, the city's not that big. I was bound to have. My blood ran cold. And then it hits me. I've been to every single crime scene in my civilian life. And then as if this big giant key just turned in my head and my memories opened up, I met Cindy at the ice cream parlor. I met her again for coffee 2 days later at the second crime scene. The first time I kissed her was at the movie theater. crime scene number 3. Remember? Oh, shit. This had to be a coincidence, except the most perfect day we ever spent together was at the amusement park. I asked her to move in with me in the haunted house ride, remember? My hands were beginning to shake. A pattern. A fucking pattern. Holy shit. The park. This summer. 16 years ago. We had been there. This was wrong. This was all wrong. Cindy couldn't be the... Oh, God. I asked her to marry me in the video store. We were picking out a movie and... Oh, shit. There was someone out there that knew every detail of my relationship with Cindy. I turned. I powered up my computer. Come on. Come on. This damn thing was booting so slow. When the screen finally displayed, I had input my login password 3 times because my fucking hands were shaking so bad. I pulled out the police information search software, Cindy's information. Within seconds, the screen was scrolling with the data. However, the most critical information, her current address, didn't appear. I stared blankly at the screen, and her last known address was the same one that we shared. Damn it! I shoved the screen away from me. The plasma monitor light as it flew away from the desk and hit the ground. And the plastic shattered as it hit the floor. I tried to remember. I bought her a Ruger 380 for protection. 380. This couldn't be happening. This can't be happening. I pulled out my cell phone and I dialed the attorney's number. His voice was groggy.
Hello?
Tom, it's Will Taylor. I need...
Will, it's 2 a.m.
Yeah, I know that. Look, I need to speak with Cindy's attorney. It's an emergency. Do you have that number?
Can't this wait
until... No, God damn it can't wait. I need it now.
All right, hold on. Was Phil Rennick? I never met the man. Just exchanged phone calls and faxes.
I grabbed a pen. I wrote the number down on my blotter. I thanked him, and I ran off. I quickly dialed the number that he gave me. Yeah, Phil Rehnquist, please.
Yes?
Hey, this is Detective Will Taylor. You're my wife's divorce attorney.
Yes, I was. Do you realize that it's 2 a.m.?
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. Look, I don't mean to disturb you so late, but I need to find my ex-wife. It's very important. I thought you might have had her new address.
Ex? Detective Taylor, the last time I spoke with your wife was almost 6 months ago. She said that you had worked things out and were getting back together. She had a friend buy your old house just after the divorce, and then she bought it back as a surprise. I assumed that the two of you were living there with no problems, as she never called again.
What? Wait, I received papers from your office today finalizing the divorce.
My office never sent you any papers.
What? I hung up the phone. I grabbed my jacket. I pulled up in front of the house 20 minutes later. I had no warrant. No legal right to go through that door. But fuck that shit, I'm going. Then it dawned on me. I still have my old key. It's on my key ring. No. No, this isn't gonna fit. Of course it would fit. And it sure did. The deadbolt clicked back as I pushed the door open of the interior. And I just remembered it. Even the nick in the entryway on the linoleum where Cindy and I dropped the edge of the couch when we first moved in.
You're home late.
Cindy? The voice came from the living room. I made my way slowly towards the living room and I noticed that every detail of the house was as if I never moved away. The pictures were back on the walls, the plastic flower arrangement on the dinner table, the old telephone stand at the edge of the hall. I stepped into the living room. Cindy stood there in the front of the living room by the edge of the TV stand. She was wearing her wedding dress. Her makeup was smeared and cheeks were wet from crying.
Sorry, the place is a mess. It's been heck of a day.
She tried to smile through the tears. I stopped about 10 feet from her. Sin, are you okay?
Sure, I was just worried you weren't coming home tonight. Were you busy at the office?
She started to move towards the couch and I instinctively stepped back in my hand, reaching for my pistol still under my coat. She looked at me as if she was confused.
What's wrong, Will?
Cindy, baby, are you the memory killer?
The what?
Your attorney didn't send me any divorce papers. He said that you changed your mind, but I got papers today anyway. Can you explain that?
I had to get your attention.
You couldn't have called me?
Would you have listened?
I don't know. I had to be honest. Since the divorce, I started, doing what any cop does. Focus on the work. Tune everything else out. Don't come up for air.
You see, I love you, Will. I needed your attention. I wanted you to see me.
Cindy, the divorce was your idea.
I thought you'd take me seriously if you thought I was leaving, but as usual, detective, your job came first.
Cindy, please tell me you didn't kill those people.
I love you.
Cindy!
Well, things can be like they were, like when we met. You remember now? I knew you would.
I looked at the little computer desk in the corner. Cindy had always used this as her workstation. As I looked over to the printer, still in the printer rack, there was one sheet of paper printed with a single word. A sick feeling washed over me. I need to get you some help. She sat down on the couch, folded her hands in front of her, and she smiled at me.
Will, we don't need counseling. You remember how it used to be. I know you remember the park. We could go back there now.
Baby, you need to come with me to the office.
It's always about your work. I need you. I love you.
I tried to sound as calm as I could, calm and gentle, but baby, I love you, but right now I need to get you some help. She stood straight up from seemingly right out of nowhere. She produces the Ruger. Damn it. All that good training in tactics you teach your girl. You never think it's going to be used against you.
No, you just said it. You love me. If you love me, then love me. Forget your damn work. Stay with me.
She pointed that Ruger directly at my chest. My gun still in my holster. I wasn't even wearing a vest. We were about 10 feet apart. If she fired, I knew I'd have no chance. Cindy, baby, put the gun down. You know I love you. We can fix this. We can fix this, okay?
Who are you kidding? Tell me you'll give up your work for me. Tell me you'll stay and things will be like they were when we first met.
Cindy, I...
Tell me!
Baby, I love you. Look, I'll find another job. I'll stay with you. Things will be like they were. Oh, God, please, baby, give me the gun. And at that moment, I meant every word. She smiled at me, and this resolution came over her. Sanity seemed to fill her eyes, and her face became radiant.
Thank you, Will. I'll love you forever.
She turned the gun to her head. Before I had time to even move, she pulled the trigger. I screamed and caught her as she fell. As I lowered her to the floor, I saw the light go out in her eyes. I buried my face in her chest and I cried. The woman I had spent 15 years of my life with had just killed herself for my attention and murdered innocent people in an effort to get me to understand that she loved me. I couldn't stop crying. My mind was screaming. The pain was unbearable. I had driven her to this. Was I the cause of innocent people dying? Now with 10? With Cindy? What kind of a bastard was I? I could feel my entire body shuddering as I still held onto her close, tears rolling down. Off in the distance, I could hear the sirens, but I didn't care. It didn't matter. It just didn't matter. They were for someone else. They had to be. My cell phone was ringing in my coat, and I didn't answer, but the sirens were getting closer and closer. And again, it didn't matter. Right now, my wife needed me, and I was gonna stay with her.
You have been listening to Memory Patterns, a Cajun Cross Global Entertainment Incorporated audio theater production. In the cast you heard, James Martinez as Detective Will Taylor, Harry Williams Jr. as Officer Fitz Hume, Alan Abshire as Detective Cole, Steve Jones Watson as Detective Winston, Wendley Boyd as Desk Sergeant Haig, and Giovanna Casanova as Cindy. Production copyright 2020. All rights reserved.